Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Well, hello and welcome to Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and this is the first week of March. Everybody I know seems to be breathing lighter, like spring is coming. Not officially here yet, but it's on its way. My guest today is Wendy Feltham. Wendy has been on Nature Now in the past. She is a great local naturalist. She described herself once wanting to learn new things, and I'm really inspired by her thrill at learning new things. Wendy's also the co-chair of the Natural History Society for the Jefferson Land Trust. She volunteers for the Marine Science Center and can be found in other times, leading low tide walks for the Marine Science Center. She's a regular contributor to iNaturalist, and she's a spectacular photographer. And I want to really point out to folks, if you haven't discovered the Rain Shadow Journal yet, it's a wonderful online journal of local artists and writers and the eclectic things at our Port Towns. And Wendy has a gallery show on the journal in last month called Birds in Flight. And I want to encourage everybody to have a look at that because it's pretty wonderful stuff. Well, today, Wendy and I are going to be talking about being a naturalist during this past year of the pandemic. I came upon this idea. I was sort of flipping through some old photos and came across a photo of a beautiful barrel cactus in bloom that I had taken almost exactly 1 year ago. It was on a trip to the Anza Borrega Desert in San Diego or east of San Diego, and it was right before the pandemic. My husband and I were probably the only people on the airplane or in the airports with masks, and we got home just before the stay-at-home orders went into place. So seeing that photograph of a year ago made me just kind of focus on, gosh, it's a strange year on oh so many fronts. But before we get to our conversation, let's first hear this week's mystery sound. That's kind of a short clip, and perhaps I'll ask Nora to play it just one more time, because what I want you to listen to is the sort of whistling part of that sound. And one little hint about the maker of our mystery sound, that it's normally quite a quiet creature, except during breeding time. But that breeding is in the boreal forests of Canada and Alaska, not around here. So we'll come back to the mystery sound a little later. And I did mention that Wendy is a regular contributor to iNaturalist. And I'm going to ask Wendy, what have you been seeing lately?
I've been seeing so many amazing things, starting with bird observations. If you drive down Center Road, the trumpeter swans are still out in agricultural fields. And I counted 59 swans on Saturday.
Wow.
They're beautiful to see. And the birds are starting to sing the spring songs. So I've seen and heard the Buick's wrens and song sparrows, and just today, red-winged blackbirds.
Yeah, I've heard the Buick's, but I'm not. And my husband jokes, are there Oldsmobile wrens too? No, they're not. It's just Buick's. But I've not heard the red-winged blackbirds.
And then in reptile news, one morning just a few days ago, it was very cold, very frosty, and I came upon a northwestern garter snake. Unfortunately, it was dead, but I sent photos to Jeff Hammerson, our local reptile expert who keeps track of sightings in this area. And he wrote back, snake activity is not expected when it's below 40 degrees.
Mm.
And then the third thing I wanted to report on, after we've had these big storms and the king tides, I started to find enormous roots on the beaches at both Irondale and Fort Flagler. and they looked like long yams, up to 3 feet long, tan on the outside, and if they were broken open, they were white.
So inside. Definitely not algae. We're talking
no. Yeah, at first I thought, why would somebody bring yams and put them here on the beach? But there were so many of them. And I put photos on iNaturalist, and an ethnobotanist identified them as sand verbena roots. And that was confirmed by our Native Plant Society here. And it was a surprise. I had no idea that a delicate looking plant with little yellow flowers.
Yeah, you know, no wonder they're such good sand stabilizers if they've got
big
roots.
Yeah, I was just going to say that these roots were boiled and eaten by local tribes. But in this area, they're no longer abundant. And the Native Plant Society is now protecting them at Fort Worden.
So observe, but don't eat, huh?
Right.
Well, and I want to ask you one more thing. I was on your iNaturalist site this morning, and you have a great photograph of two crows aloe preening. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've seen that twice now, and it's a beautiful thing to see. Where two crows, they preen each other. And the photos that you saw on iNaturalist, one of the crows has his or her head straight down with the beak pointing to the ground. And that crow stayed still like that for minutes, while the other one gently poked its beak onto its head, onto its neck, onto its wing, onto its shoulder. And it was just a beautiful thing to watch. The first time I saw this was about a month ago, and I didn't know what was going on. So I sent the photos to Bob Bokelhide, one of the top birders here on the Olympic Peninsula. And he told me what it was. It was aloe preening, which is when two birds show each other affection kind of to strengthen their bonding. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing you would expect to see with monkeys.
And crows are pretty social animals in family groups. So that's interesting. Yeah. So let's now think about this last year, a year of sheltering in place and masking and social distancing and changes in a lot of our activities. When I think about the sort of first part of the pandemic year, the sort of uncertainties and the feeling like the world was closing around me, but the natural world was kind of the only thing that wasn't closing around me. What did you experience in the first part of the pandemic year?
To me, it was a real disconnect because I would be reading the news of the people trapped in their apartments in Italy and New York City, and then I could just walk out my door into the wildlife corridor and be surrounded by forest, and or I could drive and walk on a deserted beach. Mm-hmm. So it was a year of real contrasts.
Yeah.
And yet throughout the year, somehow it was also a year of wonders for me.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered so many things.
Yeah, I was thinking about too. I mean, we certainly lost some things. We lost some opportunities. You know, the Natural History Society outings were canceled. The Audubon Society bird walks were canceled. The Protection Island puffin cruises were canceled. Well, and even outings with friends, trips with friends to go tide pooling or bird watching had to be either planned very carefully or curtailed. But I was really struck by the sort of new opportunities that opened. One for me, and I want to see if you found this true, was the gift of time that I could do more than just look at something and move on and get busy doing something else. I could actually observe things, which I just hadn't taken that kind of time to do before.
Right. I felt that way too. Like I always knew we had spotted towhees in our garden.
Mm-hmm.
But if you'd asked me how many, I would have said, oh, I don't know, maybe two. And I started to spend a lot more time in my garden and really noticing individual birds. And I was surprised one day when I counted five. Yeah, and I knew we had different bees in our garden, but I'd never really stopped to focus on them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, during the pandemic, I was photographing insects. And I started to photograph the bees in our garden. And we have at least a dozen different species. of bees or bee-like insects.
You know, one of the things I cherished during the last year's spring was, again, sort of watching the garden and watching the bird feeder much more carefully and really observing. I saw, of course, we have a couple of varied thrush that come around, and I saw a young varied thrush come with his dad to the bird feeder, and the varied thrush would sort of stay on the ground with his beak open, squawking, and dad would fly up to the bird feeder and bring him down something. And then watched over time as the young fledgling got braver and braver and made a few attempts to fly straight up to the bird feeder and didn't make it and would come down again, and dad would come down and feed him until finally he could get up there and feed himself. And it was just like, wow, this is so cool. The other thing I saw was I watched a fledgling downy woodpecker come to the suet and try to figure out what part was the suet that he could eat. Because I would see it, he would peck on the metal, he'd peck on the hard plastic stuff that the suet is in, he'd peck on that. It took him a while to figure out the suet is that stuff. That's what I peck on.
That's so funny. I noticed baby birds too. I saw baby birds that I'd never seen before. One, it's kind of a sad story, but one day I was walking at Fort Flagler along the beach, and I heard this calling over and over and over. And I tried to figure out what and where this bird was. And I was looking into the holes on the cliff where the kingfishers and the pigeon guillemots nest. And I was looking in the shrubs, and finally I looked down on the sand, and there was a baby belted kingfisher.
Oh,
and I believe it had fallen out of its hole, which was about maybe 12, 15 feet up on the cliff. And the poor thing was down there just calling and calling. And I knew I couldn't help it. I had to leave it and hope that somehow its parents would be able to help it survive. But another story, a happier story about a baby bird, also at Fort Flagler, walking along that beach. One day I heard an eagle calling and calling and calling and calling. And it ended up being a juvenile bald eagle that couldn't fly yet. And it was calling over and over. And it was first on its nest. And I stood and watched it for probably half an hour. And it was able to jump to another branch and then back to the nest. But it was flapping its wings nonstop, exercising them, getting ready to be able to fly, but couldn't fly yet.
Couldn't quite do it. Yeah, it's amazing, always amazing to me what you can observe when you really spend the time and look. You mentioned to me earlier, too, that in addition to the gift of time, you'd been exploring new places. Tell me about that.
Well, I barely have left this part of Jefferson County.
You and many of us. Yes.
Yeah, I've been to Clallam County to go hiking in the mountains, you know, a few times in the summer. And once I've been over the Hood Canal Bridge to go hiking. But basically, I've been around here, but the places have been a little different. For example, in the spring, remember at Fort Worden, there were no campers in the campground.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I used to not really go to Fort Worden because it's so crowded. But I started going and I'd be the only one there. And I would wander around on trails I didn't even know were there for about 4 hours at a time. And it was spring and the songbirds were singing and there's swallows everywhere. And before that, I hadn't really been able to differentiate between the different swallows, but you'll see tree swallows, the brilliant blue, turquoise blue in the campground. And there were violet green swallows that were nesting in the building of the Marine Science Center aquarium building. And at the lighthouse, there are barn swallows flying around. So I really enjoyed the swallows in the spring. I love Anderson Lake. And one time when I was there, the gate was closed the entire season. But then they opened it up. And they opened it up right when the baby Western toads came out, and there must have been thousands of them in the road, crossing the road both ways. That was an amazing thing to see.
You know, another thing I was thinking about the pandemic year is we also, or at least I also, really got immersed in the creative things that were coming up on Zoom or on the internet, the nature in your neighborhood and the discovering the forest thing that the Land Trust put on. And then more and more, there were all these amazing resources. Yes, like I don't want to spend all that time inside, but there was a lot out there. Did you have a favorite of thing that you discovered?
There were a lot of really great educational presentations. There was one that a friend of mine from London told me about, and it was experts and celebrities all over the world who spoke about a specific endangered species that they really cared about. That was wonderful. Locally, I loved what the Dungeness River Audubon Center put together.
Oh, yes.
Maybe twice a month, they would have presentations, not only about birds, they had a great one about owls, but also they had coyotes and raccoons and slugs. And those were really fun. They didn't record them, though, so they don't have them for people to go back and look at.
Oh, that's too bad. You know, I always knew about the Dungeness River Audubon Society, but just this year I've begun to sort of pay more attention, which I think is another outcome of the pandemic weirdness. Another thing I'm asking myself is, okay, what have I learned in this weird year? And what things am I going to try to take forward? I don't want to use the word resolutions because that's usually the kiss of death. But how do you think this last year's experience will inform your future time as one of our local naturalists?
Well, I think we won't take things for granted anymore. We'll value little things like carpooling. I haven't carpooled in over a year.
And which also puts a crimp on any kind of field trip thing. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I have met up with friends at trailheads, but that means driving separately for an hour or an hour and a half to go on a hike. And that's ridiculous. So I'm looking forward to carpooling again. And also, when I do go on hikes, I always, during this pandemic, I avoid people. If someone comes down the trail, I'll step off the trail and, you know, put my mask on. And it will be so nice to be able to talk with people that you meet and to not have to carry our masks everywhere.
Right. You know. And, you know, to take that few extra moments just to share what people have been seeing, which I don't feel comfortable doing now.
Right.
You know, I'm sort of thinking about not taking things for granted. The sort of experience of just having more time and observing more closely, just not only looking, but really observing and watching. I hope to keep increasing that in my life, just to keep watching, keep observing.
I plan to do that too. As it is, I spend hours wandering around with my binoculars and camera every day, unless it's really windy. And I'm going to continue to do that because I love taking the time to look really closely at everything.
You know, Whitney, another theme that I think I know, but I want to keep holding as a treasure is how wonderful our local habitats are and what wonderful opportunities to explore things just close at hand, you know, on the beaches or in the woods or on the lakes. We actually don't have to make excursions, like the point you made earlier. We can get out and explore places. And that leads me to be thinking about the Quimper Wildlife Corridor and Cappy's Trails. And I don't know if folks know that this year, 2021, the Wildlife Corridor marks its 25th year of concentrated community action to protect a wild green corridor in our community. And it's a huge corridor. It stretches from Port Townsend way out to sort of past Middle Point even. There is a special event that the Land Trust is hosting. It's their, this is all, of course, virtual and bring your own breakfast, conservation breakfast, that will explore how far we've come with protecting the Quimper Wildlife Corridor, why it's important for plants, animals, and humans, and to think a little bit about its future. And the conservation breakfast is Thursday, March the 18th, from 9 to 10:30. You do have to register to get the Zoom link, but it is free. And then I'm going to give a special preview because I will be the host, I'm so excited, for some conversations with sort of special guests, historians, naturalists, including Wendy, urban planners, health practitioners, community builders, longtime advocates. And we'll be talking about specifically about the Quimper Wildlife Corridor and what it means to our community. In addition to Wendy, Kate Lohr, the minister from the Quimper Unitarian Universalist Fellowship will be there. Jeff Hammerson that Wendy mentioned earlier. Plus we'll have this, you know, a wonderful young woman who is, she's a teen naturalist and peer educator and outstanding tracker. Her name is Chloe Webby. And we'll have a bunch of other people to talk to. There'll be some videos. Wendy, I'm not going to ask you to share any of your scoop any of your stories, but are you looking forward to this?
Well, I love the Quimper Wildlife Corridor. I basically live surrounded by it, and I'm a preserve steward for the Land Trust, along with a couple of friends, of an 80-acre parcel called Quimper West. Mm-hmm. And I go out there regularly and hope that if people are listening, they've never been there, that they look at the Land Trust's website and you can find a map to Quimper Wildlife Corridor and you can find Quimper West on it. And I hope you'll wander through it and see how beautiful it is.
Yeah, it's actually, I would underscore that it's a really nice, special place on the corridor. Well, again, that's on Thursday, March the 18th in the morning, 9 to 10:30. And you do need to go to the Land Trust website for details. And we have yet to listen to that mystery sound again and see what it was. So Nora, can you play it again for us? Well, those were the distinctive wing sounds, that whistling of the common goldeneye in flight. As I mentioned earlier, the goldeneye doesn't talk much unless it's breeding, and we're not likely to see that down here in the southern latitudes compared to the boreal forest. But we can hear these flight sounds, this whistling on our local ponds or along our coasts. And they're often in flocks of sort of mixed species. Wendy, have you seen any common golden eyes lately?
I have. I see them almost every day. You see them off of Point Hudson. You see them over by Oak Bay, off of Indian Island. Yeah, they're fantastic birds. What's interesting is I've been seeing common golden eyes all winter long, but until yesterday, I had not seen a Barrow's goldeneye, a different bird. Both are goldeneyes, both are black and white, but they look quite different. The common goldeneye has a white spot on its cheek, mm-hmm. and the Barrow's goldeneye is like a long teardrop.
Or a crescent.
And its wing has more black on it. And I saw those yesterday at John Wayne Marina.
Ah, well, and I'm sure they're gathering for the flight north. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Nature Now. We hope you've enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news and information about the natural community where you live. And sound engineer and editor is Nora Petrich. I encourage you to go to our podcast on the KPTZ website because there are wonderful things there that you can listen to. The ending music for today is a nod to the coming spring. It's Beethoven's Violin Sonata in F Major, Opus 24, the Spring Sonata with Anna Sophie Mutter on violin. Thank you.